Last week we spoke about the new developments in terms of currencies, and we looked at the famous cryptocurrencies and how it has impacted on the world, or the lack of impact on the world. We take the discussion further on global economics this morning. Joining us on the line from Pakistan, Professor Asad Zaman. Professor, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We always appreciate your time, Professor. Now, at the outset this morning, we'd like to ask you that, from an Islamic point of view, how is the issue of spiritual development linked to Islamic economics?
Alhamdulillah, this is a very deep and important question. And this requires thinking about the history of the world as it developed. Because you see, what happened is that in Europe, they rejected religion for a number of reasons. Basically, they had lots of violent and brutal and ruthless battles between Protestants and Catholics. So the Europeans got really sick of religion. And so they said that, well, let's make religion a personal affair. In our public domain, we will not talk about religion. And slowly, this decision to exclude religion from the public domain led them to create a type of knowledge which is called secular knowledge or objective knowledge, about which they wanted to achieve agreement between all people, regardless of their religions. So that was a sensible goal for a secular society, because they kept fighting over religion. And so one of the things that they had to exclude from consideration was the matters of heart and spirit, which are more subjective and less easy to agree upon. So as a result, this whole body of knowledge developed, political science, economic theory, which is supposedly objective. But one of the ways that it has achieved this objectivity is by excluding spirituality, excluding heart, excluding emotions. And this had tremendous consequences, tremendously harmful consequences.
Okay.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so Islam allows a free market. So how do we strike the balance between, you know, on the one hand, we have the freedom Islam has granted us to do business and acquire wealth. And then on the other hand, we have the directive that we have been given that, you know, we do not make the acquisition of wealth our ultimate objective. So how do we draw the balance between these two?
Yes, this is a crucial difference, because of the, because today, all over the world, you see, in the 19th century, Europeans conquered about 85% of the globe. So as a result, there is a defeated mindset among all non-European people. So we tend to follow and imitate without thinking for ourselves. So when it is said to us that free markets are great, then we say, of course, yes, and Islam allows free markets. But the fact of the matter is that the free markets of Islam are very different from the free markets of capitalism. Islam has a very heavy set of regulations on markets. And there are ahadiths which indicate that the person who is out to make a profit at the expense of other people, this is not permissible, this is prohibited. So, for example, the person who stores up money, scarce goods to profit from scarcity and to sell them at a high price, this is not preferred or not permissible. On the other hand, someone who trades for the benefit of the people, he brings in goods when the people are in need, he is blessed. So there is a very strong difference between between trying to do trade for the benefit of the people and trying to do trade for making your own profit. And today, the Western theory of capitalism says that everyone should work for their own profits and without any regard for others. And this is what led to the environmental collapse. Everybody is just greedily trying to extract their own profit without concern for others. This is not permissible in Islam. If a business does something which pollutes the environment, This is not a concern to Western business, but for a Muslim business, we have to look at the overall impact of the business. Is it providing a benefit or is it providing a loss? Even if the costs are not something that we pay directly, we will be responsible on the day of judgment if we pollute the rivers, if we cause any other kind of environmental damage, even if we kill off animals, that is also our responsibility. So there is a huge difference, but unfortunately, because we are so impressed with the West in general, that these differences are not highlighted. And we prefer to say that, yes, our models are in conformity with the dominant models. So this has caused a lot of damage.
Yes, certainly. There are certain mysteries that we could almost say exist. And if you look at some of those that have led to theories that economic theories claim to be universal laws about human behavior, which are supposedly valid across time and space. And the question is that why do economists claim universal truths about for theories which are obviously false? How does behavioral economics decisively reject economic theories of human behavior?
Now you have asked a very deep question, because today all over the world all governments are running their policies according to the dominant economic theories, and yet at the same time the collapse and failure of economic theories is obvious to all, in the sense that in the global financial crisis the profession as a whole could not figure out that a crisis was going to happen, and after it happened, it could not figure out the policies to use to prevent the Great Recession which followed. And everybody, yani the Queen of England, went to London School of Economics to ask why you guys could not see this coming. And the US Congress appointed a committee to investigate the failure of economics. So the fact that economic theory has failed is almost obvious, and at the same time it enjoys enormous prestige and continues, surprisingly, to be used. The same theories which failed in the global financial crisis, they continue to be used. So this is a mystery. This is a strange thing, that how can a theory which is so obviously wrong, so obviously false, continue to be taught at universities all over the world? So I was also brainwashed by my education into believing these theories. And it is really a shock and horror as to how very sensible and very intelligent people can believe such theories which are so, you know, drastically wrong. And the reason for this is that this is in the interests of power. So this is the famous theory of Michel Foucault about power knowledge, and how power really consists not in the terms of having guns, but in the terms of shaping minds. So this is the first business of power. See, 50 people cannot own half the planetary wealth without making us consent to it. And they make us consent to it by shaping our minds. And one of the most powerful weapons for shaping our minds are these economic theories, which tell us that capitalism is the best system, and because it is the best system for them, it works wonderfully. They get half the planetary wealth, and as long as we believe that this is the best system, we will not be able to understand what is going on, and we will not be able to take steps against this system, which concentrates wealth in the hands of the few, exactly contrary to the Quranic injunctions that let this wealth not be something which circulates within only a few hands.
Okay, now, Professor, going further, why does Islamic economists accept repulsive human behaviors as being universal laws, and then at the same time they attempt to justify this acceptance using the Quran and the Hadith?
Now I am going to get into trouble. This is a battle that I have been having with my fellow Islamic economists for more than 10 years. But basically, the problem is that the hegemony of the West and their astounding accomplishments in, you know, physics and technology and biology have created the impression that they cannot make mistakes. So when economic theory claims that it is a science just like physics, then we tend to believe it. I used to believe it too. So once you say that, well, economic theory is just another science like physics, then you say that, well, it must be right. So even when the things that it says are obviously wrong, you say that, well, it comes from the West and it comes from people who are so smart that they have put rockets on the moon, so they can't possibly make such huge blunders. But in fact, economic theory is full of huge blunders. So this is the problem that has derailed and Islamic economics, that the Islamic economists, when they saw obvious contradictions between Western economic theory and Islam, then they tended to rationalize it. They tended to patch up the differences, and they tried to accept the Western theory and to reinterpret our Islamic teachings to make them match. I will give you just one example of this phenomena, and that is scarcity. See, the first generation of Muslim economists like Maulana Maududi and Sayyid Nasser, I think, and many other major economists saw that the West says that scarcity is the basic principle of economics. And they said, no, Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, Fazlullahul Wasi', Allah Ta'ala's fazl, Allah Ta'ala's bounty is plentiful. So how can there be scarcity when there is Fazlullah? So that was the first generation. But the second generation, which came in the 70s, they studied Western economics. The first generation had only studied Quran and Hadith, and they were looking at it from the outside. But the second generation went and studied economics in Western schools. And then they got brainwashed into believing that this is a great and wonderful thing because it has a lot of mathematics and a lot of complex and sophisticated behaviors. And so they thought that this is correct. So then they said, well, if they say that scarcity is the fundamental, then it must be true. And then they found ways of adjusting Islamic teachings so that Islamic teachings would also be in conformity with scarcity. So this is just one example. There are hundreds of examples all over the place. Yes. Where false Western teachings have been accommodated within an Islamic framework. And for that reason, a genuine Islamic approach has not been developed so far. So what is called Islamic economics is really the accommodation of Islam to Western economics.
Fascinating perspective, Professor, and we'll continue exploring this. What is the true Islamic ideals of economics as we go along in the next few weeks. We appreciate the insight that you've shared with us today. And as always, Jazakumullah khair for your time. Until we chat next week again, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, and wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, that was Professor Asad Zaman, and giving us fascinating insight where he's saying that what is the core values of Islamic economics and what is the core values of Western economics, and what some Islamic economists are doing is attempting to make the Islamic economics fit into the Western system, which is not the right way to approach.